With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Tired of pickup truck bed chaos? Meet Decked. Game-changing USA-made full bed-length drawers for tools and gear. Waterproof, dustproof, lockable, secure. Whether you're working, hunting, fishing, camping, or just getting out of town. And introducing Decked Deco Cases. Tough, modular, problem-solving cases built for the truck, job site, campsite, or garage. Say goodbye to random bins and tie-downs. Order now at Decked.com/iHeart for free shipping. Decked. Your truck, your rules. Decked.com/iHeart.
Man, we're really excited to be here. It's awesome to get started. And so now we take off.
This is the Training Camp Report with Tom Opperman and Bob Labriola on Steelers Nation Radio.
Wrapping up yesterday's Training Camp Report, we hypothesized that there would be no such thing as a victory Monday when the Steelers returned to St. Vincent campus for practice Monday. And boy, were we ever proven right when it came to that, as the Steelers were greeted back on campus with a full padded practice, 100% Steelers on Steelers football, as Tomlin likes to say. We're just really smart guys, Labs. We know how this guy thinks, and we know the operation that he has in mind.
And I think as a result, we should have had, me and you should have had Victory Tuesday.
What is the, not have to come in today, dude?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's only fair.
They could run Bob and Tom's greatest hits. No, but I mean, that doesn't, it doesn't surprise me that, you know, he brings them back in pads. They were off Sunday, you know, and they're, during the season, I believe, you know, some of the Victory Monday stuff has to do with, you know, you're only, according to the CBA, you're only allowed so many, you know, days of practice and padded practices. I think it's like 14 or 15 padded practices over an 18-week season.
That's
so
right.
In Victory Mondays, you know, you might as well, because you're probably not going to be able to do very much anyway. You know, bodies require some time to heal. And so, you know, I can understand the Victory Monday during the season. I think, though, that based on the limited time you have at camp and, you know, the fact that there's no such thing as two-a-days anymore, and so you got to get to hitting in somewhere.
Yep.
And so I think that, you know, you know, I wish there was Victory Monday, but I totally understand why there was not. Let me say it that way.
When it comes to Tomlin, you know, he is at the forefront, really, when it comes to player safety. So I'm sure he understands, you know, hey, 14 padded practice throughout the season is probably a good idea for our players' long-term health. But deep down, he loves putting those pads on, doesn't he? He wishes he could do it a lot more, I'm sure, as the season winds out on.
Well, I mean, the fact that supports what you just said is that there's live tackling here.
Yeah.
At training camp,
right,
every day. And I don't know that there's another team in training camp. You know, sometimes when the national people come around to visit, they're always shocked that there's tackling. I mean, teams don't do that. They just don't. And as you know, I've told this story, but I was standing almost directly next to Kevin Colbert when Mike Tomlin revealed that. I don't know how many years ago it was, because Le'Veon Bell was still here. So that kind of dates it at least. And, you know, I remember in a subsequent interview with Mike Tomlin, you know, I asked him and he said, oh, I didn't tell anybody. He said, I didn't tell the assistant coaches until, you know, we were ready to take the field that afternoon.
Wow.
He said, because I didn't want word getting out. And he said, I didn't want somebody trying to talk me out of it. yeah, there's definitely physical contact. There's hitting, there's tackling during training camp. And, And then he dials it back once you get into the regular season, partly because of the rules and partly because I just think that's the way he believes is the best way to prepare the team and then take care of the team once you decide who's going to be on the team.
Well, the Steelers did get a minor victory on practice yesterday with the return of some familiar faces, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Najee Harris, full participant. Chase Claypool, full participant. Pat Freiermuth, full participant, although he had been working his way back the week prior. And Deontay Johnson returning to the fold. So the offensive Death Star looks like it's up and running at 100% capacity. Hopefully that can remain and we can see, you know, maybe a series or two with all of these guys together against Jacksonville on Saturday, because that's so beneficial to start working this, you know, first team offense together as the full unit you expect to have out there on September 11th in Cincy.
You know, and I don't, you're right. And I don't know what it says, though, about the fact that all those guys returned and the defense kind of dominated yesterday.
Yes, that's true. Not a good thing, I don't think. Although we can look at it glass half full and say, hey, defense probably got lit up a little bit by Tomlin based on what they played like on Saturday. So good bounce back performance from the defense. You see how we spin that into the positive light?
Yeah. And you know, that's also, I believe, a big part of, you know, how Mike Tomlin deals with situations and pushes buttons with players and stuff, you know, the whole respect thing, you know, or payback. Because like the one thing he said, someone asked him after a recent practice, something about how do you, you know, view the fact or balance the ebb and flow when, you know, the offense, I think it was the day that last week when he, the first time he ran 2 minute, the offense went down the field and scored twice.
Yeah.
He was asked about that. He says, hey, you know, I don't try and justify it or whatever. He said, I just keep rolling the ball out there and you tell the competitors to compete. He said, and after you get your butt kicked for a while, then maybe you get tired of it and start kicking somebody's butt back. And, you know, that's kind of, I think, a very solid way of dealing with this, because these guys, you know, they're professionals and all that stuff. I get that, and everybody kind of does, but they don't, they're not where they are because they like losing at anything. So yeah, you get your butt kicked, and then he shows the video, and then you get your butt kicked and he shows the video, and you're thinking
slow-mo this time.
I'm tired of this, you know. So yeah, it's that's part of it as well.
Well, Coach Tomlin spoke to the media following yesterday's practice. Let's take a listen to Coach's thoughts right here on the training camp report.
Good to get back to work. Before we got to the field, I thought what we did this morning was probably one of the most significant exercises in team development, an opportunity to analyze our in-stadium tape, to make some acknowledgments and some corrections, to learn from the things that we've done and just gain an experience associated with combing through it. We took our time this morning and devoted our time completely to that. And this afternoon we came back out here and got back in a Steelers versus Steelers training camp-like mentality. We'll use the lessons learned in stadium as our guide as we get better, and I just think it's appropriate to do so. You know, I thought our two-minute was not where it needed to be offensively and defensively at the end of the half the other night. And so as you can see in team today, we plugged in another two-minute segment, and I think that's what you do during team development. You have a hardcore plan, but you also remain light on your feet for the unforeseen, for what the group might need in an effort to keep the train moving. Excited about that component. From an injury standpoint, Boykins has got a rib. Miles Boykins has got a rib. Could be described as day-to-day. Carl Joseph's got a foot. Is being evaluated. It's probably beyond day-to-day. And nothing new to add other than what I acknowledged after the game or prior to. I'll pause and take questions.
Like, from your tape, what do you see about the offensive line? Do you like or maybe need to work on?
You know, I thought we played with good energy. I think we're still growing from a cohesion perspective. I thought we gave up too many hits on the quarterback. And some of it's cohesion. Some of it is, you know, guys physically getting beat. But I want a cleaner pocket for our quarterbacks, and what I saw, I think that's the standard. But there was a lot of good things, but that's something that we're going to be uncompromising regarding. Our goal is to keep our quarterbacks as clean as possible, and we could have done a better job, even for a first time out.
And that's acknowledging how we practice out here isn't necessarily how you practice in game in terms of the pocket. There's certain professionalism that you do in practice settings. We encourage defenders and rushers to stay away from the quarterback, and specifically his arm action. So oftentimes it'll take the offensive line group a while, if you will, to warm up to in-stadium action from a strain standpoint. And so it's reasonable to expect those guys to be better in that regard, and that's our goal. That'll be our mindset as we work this week.
How do you think the quarterbacks responded to that Saturday? Obviously, that wasn't one of Ben's strong suits by the end of it. But
in terms of what?
When that pocket wasn't clean or they had to face rushers.
You know, I don't think that they blinked, any of them, in the face of whether it was pressure or some of the challenges of coverages. I thought the quarterbacks did a good job in the football game.
Mike, when you were going through the tape, you alluded to what you saw 2 minutes on both sides of the ball. What else defensively did you notice that left out of you?
You know, we got to have better gap integrity, but we talked about that after the game. We won't grade on the curve based on who's available, who's playing. The 11 on the field represent us. There's standards that we live by, and we weren't strong enough, particularly against the run. We didn't tee up our situational ball well enough because we were weak against the run at times in game.
When it comes to divvying up the reps out here, how much do you weigh one preseason in-stadium opportunity versus, 3 weeks of practice now?
It's weighted more heavily, certainly, because of some of the things we mentioned, the live pocket being a major component of it and so forth. So make no mistake about it, the in-stadium action is significant in the evaluation process.
Do you consider what Spillane and Bush are doing right now competing for one spot, or do you expect both of those guys to earn some type of role for the regular defense?
I would imagine that both guys are varsity in their abilities, and so that there's going to be a role for them. But make no mistake, there's a competition component to what's transpiring here in terms of dividing the labor up, for sure.
Mike, how did you think those guys did in coverage on Saturday night?
I thought they could be a lot better, and that'll be my expectation this week.
Anyone else? You guys had some fun watching that hit at the end of the game by
Davis? I didn't watch that with the collective.
Coach Tomlin speaking to the media following yesterday's practice. He led right off labs talking about how valuable it was to get a look at that film in the stadium against another team. And it really has to be. You know, you can learn so much on Steelers, and we'll get to this in a second, but kind of what he was saying about the offensive line and evaluating them in camp speaks to this. But he probably learned so much more about his team based on that game Saturday night and watching the film in the days following than he did perhaps all of training camp.
Well, and yeah, because, you know, as he mentioned, you know, the one specific example, the obvious one, is the quarterbacks, you know, are under no threat of violence.
Correct. Yeah.
And when he says we encourage our players, you know, to stay away from the quarterback and his arm action, you know, I think encourage is kind of a understated way of what is actually being told to them. You know, people often ask me, why don't the Steelers put their quarterback in a red jersey like all the other teams? And, you know, I explained it. I said, you know, Mike Tomlin will tell them in no uncertain terms what he expects in that area. And if you can't remember it or choose to ignore it, you know, Route 30 goes both ways, east and west. So you can drive out here on Route 30 and you can drive out of here on Route 30. So, you know, there's that. And the other thing is, not only does that no threat of physical harm apply to the quarterbacks, but receivers too, down the field. I mean, I think you learn a lot about those guys too. You know, how aggressive and confident do they go up for passes? Do they run across the middle? You know, those kinds of things. Because even though in a lot of instances, based on the rules, those guys are protected, defenseless players, I think, is the exact terminology that the officials use. You can still, you know, line a guy up and hit him with your shoulder in his chest, and I don't imagine that feels real good either. So, yeah, there's a lot to be learned, I think, but from about your team from a game, and I think that also there's a lot to teach to your team from a game, and I Mike Tomlin, I think, relishes both of those aspects of the video review following a preseason game.
Well, to your point about the offensive line, we always like to say and put it out there, we're not offensive line experts here. If you want the expertise at that position, you got to wait about another 40 or so minutes to get Wolf and Starks in the locker room, and they'll tell you everything you need to know about that unit. But it has to be, in a weird way, kind of a silver lining to have the quarterback be able to get hit in these preseason games, because, like he was saying, you know, you don't have that threat when you're an offensive lineman practicing in the camp practices, so might not be that big of a deal in your head when your guy beats you and, you know, you don't have to look down at number two on his butt and be like, oh man, I'm sorry, or see that the ball got stripped. So hopefully that can, you know, start to drill into these guys' heads a little bit, like, hey, I'm protecting this quarterback here. If I don't, you know, get off on my block or succeed against the person that is rushing against me, I'm going to have to look back and explain some things to my signal caller here.
Yeah, and, you know, Craig Wolfley talks about some instances where he, you know, he was part of a huddle.
Yes.
When guys looked at each other and said, you know, Bradshaw, for example, when he had that bad elbow and came back in that game against the Jets in 83, I think it was, you know, they all looked at each other and said, he's not going down. He's not going to get hit. You have to do,
yeah.
Right? You do what you have to do. You deal with the penalty flags later. But, you know, you got to keep him clean. That's it. There's no compromise in this. There's that. And the one thing, though, that you have going for you, I think, with this particular group of quarterbacks is, you know, they can help themselves a little bit, too,
respect. And we saw that on Saturday, for sure.
Yes, they can move around in the pocket a little bit. And I think that once their ability and willingness to run the ball a little bit, or, you know, use their legs to buy time, the opponent is going to have to think about how it rushes the quarterback. You know, you just can't go after him helter skelter, because if you don't maintain the integrity of your rush lanes, you know, Mitch Trubisky gets out on the perimeter, Pickett gets out on the perimeter, Mason Rudolph gets out on the perimeter, you got a double-edged problem.
Yep.
Because maybe he runs for 15 yards, or, you know, maybe you think he's going to run for 15 yards and you break your coverage or leave your man, or, you know, whatever it's, whether it's zone or man-to-man or some combination, whatever, and then they just throw it over your head or throw it where you're not or throw it where you were, and that's a big problem too. So, you know, I always kind of think about it as, you know, when you're dealing with one of those kinds of quarterbacks, the three that I just mentioned on the Steelers, but Josh Allen and, you know, those kind of people too, it has to be the pass rush has to be kind of analogous to an anaconda. The way that an anaconda snake kind of just encircles its prey and then just squeezes the life out of it. I mean, that's what you have to do as a pass rush unit against those kinds of quarterbacks, because otherwise, as I said, the guy gets away and then you got all kind of problems.
Steelers training camp report on Animal Planet, apparently, it seems like. A regular Steve Irwin over here.
Well, hope not, because I think Steve Irwin is with us, you know, great crocodiles in the sky or whatever. But, yeah, and if I ever even saw a garter snake, I'd probably run away screaming. But, you know, I've seen.
You're an educated man. You watch the, your television shows aren't just a bunch of crap. You learn some things.
Yeah, I watch something besides ESPN. A lot besides ESPN, now that you mention it.
Well, we somehow managed to make it through the entire first segment without really drilling down into the quarterbacks, so we failed the people there. We'll have to do that when we return on the other side. And I also want to touch on what Tomlin said, you know, seeing they didn't succeed in one area, particularly in the game, so we lead off practice with that very same drill the next day. We'll get into all that on the other side here on the Training Camp Report on SNR. Get in zone,
AutoZone. Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I gotta change the oil in my car.
Right now, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil Platinum Full Synthetic,
with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99.
What do I do with my old oil?
We can recycle your used oil for free.
And do you have oil for my old work truck?
You can find the right high mileage oil to help it go farther right here at AutoZone. Get in the zone. AutoZone. Restrictions apply.
This is the Training Camp Report with Tom Opperman and Bob Labriola on Steelers Nation Radio.
Coach Tomlin said in his post-practice presser that watching film Monday morning was one of the most significant exercises in team development that they've had so far in this camp experience. And one thing that he did not like on that film was the way that the offense executed the two-minute drill at the end of the first half. Obviously, Kenny was pretty successful with it, his second chance at it in the second half, but he did not really think that it was up to par. So what does he do, Labs? Two-minute drill again in this practice returning from their in-stadium action against the Seahawks.
Yeah, and I don't think the defense really – I think that the defense's performance in the two-minute did not exactly tickle his fancy, because at the end of the first half, Geno Smith took the Seahawks 61 yards in 9 plays in 1 minute and 27 seconds to a touchdown. They scored it with 21 seconds left. So, that's not good enough either from a defensive standpoint. So it was kind of the way that it worked, you killed two birds with one stone. Because, at the end of the game, the offense distinguished itself, the Kenny Pickett drive for the touchdown. But if you look, 2 minute is kind of a catch-all for, the last parts of each half. And, the Steelers did not distinguish themselves on offense, because they could have run out the game had they been a little bit better at it.
Right.
The Steelers had they lost the ball on a sack, on a fourth down sack in a tie game with 1:23 left. So, they were in Seattle territory at the time. You maybe convert that fourth down, fourth and one too, by the way, which is a makeable down and distance, and maybe you can hold on to the ball a little bit, get it into range, and kick a field goal and go home, as opposed to needing a rookie inside linebacker to make a big time NFL play with a strip sack to get the ball back for the offense. But it worked out, and that's good, and all that stuff. But if you look at the game as a coach, he would look at these different components where, it ended well, but you had a chance to not put yourself in a situation where you needed a takeaway and then a touchdown, in somewhat dramatic fashion to win the game. So when you look at the two-minute performance against Seattle, it wasn't particularly good in either half. Again, it ended up okay, but if you did it better in both of those situations, you're not in the situation you ended up being at the end of the game, needing that dramatic defensive play, and then the offense to go, what was that drive, 43 yards and 5 plays. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was an opportunity. And again, this is what Mike Tomlin likes to do. We might look at it, or someone you are, someone who's talking right now, might have written about what a nice job the rookie quarterback did in the final minute, in the final 87 seconds or whatever it was, to pull out a victory. But the way a coach looks at it is, if that rookie had done a little bit better job about 2 minutes earlier on the clock, he wouldn't have needed the drama, because the drama is not always going to be there for you. The whole concept of needing a takeaway and actually coming through with one, how rare that is in the NFL. I mean, it just doesn't happen very often. So you can use it as a teaching tool. You can bend the facts a little bit, use it as a teaching tool, and it made for an interesting end to what should have been should have been but wasn't a Victory Monday practice.
Those damn coaches always raining on our parades with reality.
Yeah.
Injecting reality into scenarios. I know, seriously.
Right. Hate that. Hate reality.
Well, the Steelers had 2 2-minute periods on Monday's practice. Parameters were 32-yard, your own 32-yard line, one timeout. You need a touchdown to win this thing. The defense carried the day twice. They forced the first team offense into a fourth down and was able to get the stop on fourth down, so turnover on downs. That's a win for your defense. And then second team offense ended with an interception from the defense. So defense definitely got a little bit of a fire lit under them from what they saw on film on Saturday's game and probably what the coaching staff and Coach Tomlin told them, you know, was expected of them and how that performance was well below the line.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, I'm going to go back to what we were talking about earlier, the payback thing, you know, among your teammates, you know, because the last time they ran 2 minute, I mean, you know, Mason Rudolph was very efficient. Brought him down for a touchdown. And then Kenny Pickett, I think, was two plays. You know, one.
Yeah, bang, bang.
It was a blown coverage on the first one. Jaylen Warren ran down the sideline with a, you know, pass that probably traveled about 8 feet. And then, you know, Kenny Pickett made a big time NFL throw to the middle of the end zone to Steven Sims, you know, right on the button. Great throw. I mean, it was a great throw. And, you know, the offense is celebrating and eating the good food that night, I'm sure. And, you know, the defense was stuck listening to, you know, the chatter. There's, you know, because there is some chatter, I'm sure. Last night, I'm sure Cam Hayward did a little payback in that chatter department. And then the defense ate good, I'm sure. I don't know what it was, but, yeah, they will because the defense won the competition periods. So I do not discount the value of bragging rights, you know, as Mike Tomlin said in those situations, to the victor goes the spoils. You know, it's not a big thing. And even the guys who lost, quote unquote, lost and had to eat regular food, what they missed out on, they can certainly afford, you know, to but it's the whole, you know, just it tastes better. It's
plain and simply, it just tastes a lot better.
It just tastes a lot better when it's, you know, you're taking it from guys that you like, but you like to beat. I mean, you know, it just is like when, I don't know, when you make Jacob Reck buy you the pizza. I mean, you could buy your own pizza.
The best part about that is we get it for free too, so he doesn't know that. I'm double dipping here.
Yeah, there you go. See, it's the same pizza, but it just tastes better. It just seems to taste better when you win it over someone that, you know, you like to beat. And I don't know, human nature, I guess.
Well, there's a little bit of a quarterback shuffle yesterday. Trubisky ran with the ones. That was normal. But Pickett got a chance to go with the twos. And everybody keeps saying, you know, it was according to plan. It was according to plan. And I believe it. It was according to plan. They had a plan that they set out. And nothing that happened on Saturday warranted a change in the quarterback depth chart. And just because you come out on Monday and Pickett ends up running with the twos and seven shots and in this two-minute drill, there's nothing to read too much. And in fact, I'm refreshing my live depth chart right now, and it still appears that Mason Rudolph is number two on it. So people are going to want to read into every little thing, especially after what they saw on Saturday. And I'm sure a lot of people are reading into Pickett's with the twos, Pickett's with the twos. He ran with the twos. It's over. Mason Rudolph is done. He's down on the third in the depth chart. Pickett finally supplanted him. But this is not the case whatsoever. That was going to, even if Pickett was terrible on Saturday, you could have expected him to see him with the twos on Monday.
Yeah, and, you know, there's, you know, those kinds of depth chart changes, pecking order changes, permanent pecking order changes, you know, usually it's not enough for one guy to play well. You have to have the other guy mess up.
Right.
Because if everybody plays well, then you stay where you are. Because, you know, I keep thinking back to the Ben situation when he was a rookie. You know, the last time the Steelers drafted a quarterback in the first round. You know, Ben came to camp number three.
Mm-hmm.
who was Tommy Maddox, excuse me, Tommy Maddox, Charlie Batch, and Ben. So Charlie Batch injured his knee. I mean, you talk about events that shaped how that unfolded. A critical one in my mind was Charlie Batch's injury. Because if Charlie Batch doesn't injure his knee at the point of training camp, which was before the preseason even started, really.
Yeah.
You know, Ben was getting a lot of second team reps right away. And the only reason he was getting second team reps was because Charlie Batch wasn't there anymore. And so, you know, you got to see him with better players and against better players. And again, I don't know that that happens without the injury, because I don't know that you can do enough to, as a rookie, to supplant a veteran, unless the veteran either does something to help you by messing up, or he is removed from the competition by an injury. And that's what happened. And then after seeing Ben for a while as the number two guy, you go into the season, you don't have Charlie Batch because he was on IR. So he's your backup now. So then when the starter goes down, you got to play the backup. I mean, it's just, that's the way it is. That's the way the system kind of works. And so, you know, Bill Cowher's hand was forced.
Yep.
Now, it worked out great.
Really great.
But, you know, I just don't know that Ben gets the opportunity when he got the opportunity if it weren't for the injuries. And, you know, if the injuries don't happen, then he doesn't get the opportunity to go 13-0 as a rookie. And then after that, you know, it's a done deal then. He's the starter. And, you know, then you're looking at the other people in different contexts or a different lens. And then, you know, and the team is 15-1, then the team wins the Super Bowl, and then it's over. You know, right, from then on, he's the starter, and then you're looking for backups. You know, you're not looking, when you're looking at quarterbacks, you're not looking to bring a guy to compete with the, you know, 24-year-old who in his two seasons as a starter went 15-1 and won a Super Bowl. So that's off the table, and you're just looking for, well, what if something happens to him? You know, what kind of a backup do we want to have behind him? So, the way the situation is going now, none of the quarterbacks has been removed or is removing himself from the position that they were in when this started, either by poor play or some physical misfortune. And so, there's not going to be a whole lot of movement. There just isn't. I mean, I don't know how, you know, I can see that people might want Kenny Pickett to move up the depth chart, but you know, you have to have some credibility as the coach. And the guys in the locker room, you know, you start moving Mason Rudolph down or, you know, Mitch Trubisky down and Kenny Pickett up. Those guys, they know,
right, you know, that this, you're just doing this. Yeah.
Right. You're just doing this because he's a number one pick. You're not doing this because of what we're seeing on the field and watching on video after every day, because it's, you know, the guys ahead of him are not messing up and they're playing well or well enough to, you know, to maintain their spot. So, you know, I just don't know how much change there's going to be, because while Kenny Pickett may have shown that he has done well enough against what you would call JV competition to move up, but who has done poorly enough on the varsity that's going to get replaced? I don't know. I can't see a whole lot changing going into this game against Jacksonville. And if nothing, you know, if the status quo remains, everybody plays the same, whatever level it is, great, mediocre, awful, you know, there's no difference or big enough difference that prompts a move, then you're going into the third week of the preseason with the same pecking order that you started the first week of OTAs with. So, you know, you keep watching, looking for something that might happen that might, you know, either force a change or merit a change. But if it doesn't, there's not going to be any change.
So the people that are clamoring for Kenny Pickett to move up the depth chart, just they really astound me, because they're obviously huge Kenny Pickett fans, or else you wouldn't be demanding for him to move up the depth chart to the starting role, to the backup role. Yet they're demanding for something that could be extremely detrimental to their guy's development. You don't want to rush a guy up when he's not ready. I love the fact that Kenny could go against the threes and against the fours, because it showed his confidence. He walked out on that field on Saturday and knew he was the best guy that was still remaining on the field. And I want him to build that confidence up, and kind of a nice little safe incubator that the Steelers have developed for him. So you're going to just demand that you throw that all away. Ah, put him at number one. He's ready for it. Well, he might flounder when you put him in that situation too early. And then you're going to be the guy who's demanding Kenny Pickett get cut, and it was the worst pick in Steelers history. So it's funny to me and a little bit ironic that everybody's demanding him to rise up this depth chart because they want to see him do well. But that rise up the depth chart too early might be the reason why he doesn't do well.
Well, and to me, you know, I get what you're saying. I don't want to believe personally that Kenny Pickett is so fragile that his career could be ruined by putting him on the first team too soon. But the way I look at it is, you know, as a coaching staff, as a coach, as an organization, all of those, you know, bigger picture things, in order to have credibility with your players, and there's guys in there, Cam Hayward, I keep throwing that name out.
Yeah.
You know, Cam Hayward is a multiple-time first team All-Pro. Okay, you got to look him in the eye and say to him, you know, we're making this move either because it's the best thing for the team, or we have to, either by, you know, either as a result of poor performance or injury. You know, the Alan Faneca story that I've told, you know,
yep.
Back in 2004, are you excited to get a chance to see the rookie play? You're asking your multiple-time first-team All-Pro guard, and he looks at you like you have three heads. You know, are you crazy? Excited? No, I'm not excited. You know, this is a business. We're professionals. And I think that, you know, people have to remember that, you know, fans – can, you know, they get excited for the game or whatever, turn it on, watch it on TV. If the Steelers lose, they turn it off. And I get that the loss lingers a little bit, you know, with you, but it's not the same for the guys who are actually a part of that, who that is their profession. And I don't know, I just, the way I look at it is, as I've said, you have to maintain your credibility. Because there are going to be times, you know, with Cam Hayward and other players, Najee Harris, whomever, that you're going to ask them to do things, either sacrifice roles or change, you know, maybe you say to TJ Watt, and I'm making this stuff up, so please, people, you're listening, do not go crazy over this, but maybe you have to say to TJ Watt at some point, hey, look, you need to quit trying to sack the quarterback. We need you to do this instead a little bit more often to help this team win, okay? And the only way you can do that is if the players, by your previous actions, know and trust that you're only asking this because you firmly believe that it gives the team the best opportunity to win. You know, I really believe that Bill Cowher's job, when all the people, a lot of the fans wanted him run out of here, which was after the 2003 season. Okay. That was 7-9. That might've been the springboard for the following two seasons, which were 15-1. And then the Super Bowl team, because Bill Cowher played that 2003 season every week trying to win. Okay, and he was doing things trying to win, trying to win, trying to win, trying to win. And the players see that. And so then when you come to them and you say in 04 to Jerome Bettis as an example, you know, we want to make you a short yardage guy, and we're going to use Deuce Staley as the primary running back. okay, Jerome Bettis is in the Hall of Fame. So for him to accept that kind of request, order, however you want to verbalize it, you have to have his trust.
Yep.
And the way you earn his trust is by playing every game to win all the time, because these players, they understand that their careers could end in the next snap of the ball. So if you let's give him a chance to play, or if you, well, let's see what he can do, or let's see if we can get a better draft positioning, or, you know, those other things that are floating around these days, you lose your locker room. Then your players aren't going to, they're not going to buy into when you want to try something or ask them to do something or sacrifice something or, you know, for the good of the team, because, you know, BS, you weren't interested in the good of the team last
practice
year.
What you preach.
You were interested. Right. So that's why, you know, I'm always looking at this in that respect, because you can't just have a short-sighted view of it and think, well, I want to see Kenny Pickett. You know, I like him. I liked him in college. I have his jersey, you know, whatever. And let's see him now run with the first team. It doesn't work that way. You know, it's professional football, and you have to treat the players as professionals. And so that's why, as we're looking at this and trying to, you know, project, or, you know, look down the road, and, you know, you and your crystal ball, me and my magic eight ball, what's going to happen next, you have to keep in mind that, you know, anything you want to do has to be thought out and according to the, I don't know, the decorum that's necessary to be a success in professional sports with professional athletes who have dedicated their lives to this as a career. So I get that there are fans who want to see Kenny Pickett move up, but I think that those are people who like Kenny Pickett or don't like Mason Rudolph, or, you know, but you can't look at, you can't have a favorite. So we'll just have to see what happens down the road. I think the Jacksonville game, you know, might help clear things up a little bit one way or the other, because either it's going to impact one of the guys in ahead of him in a, you know, less than positive way, or it might impact him in a less than positive way, and you see, wow, this guy's a rookie. So, you know, let's find out what happens, let it play out, because I really think the people demanding change went into it with a preconceived notion that this is what they wanted to happen.
We're going to take a look at the defensive side of the ball in a position battle that is still hotly contested on the inside linebacker spot. So we'll do that to wrap things up on the training camp report on SNR.
This is the Training Camp Report with Tom Opperman and Bob Labriola on Steelers Nation Radio.
Just a few more minutes here on today's Training Camp Report. And one thing, Labs, that I wanted to get your thoughts on was the Devin Bush-Robert Spillane position battle. I think everybody wanted Devin Bush to really, you know, take this early, and that has just yet to happen. He hasn't been able to really get a firm grasp on that inside linebacker spot, and that position battle seems to continue to ride on as they rotate both of those guys in and out with the first team unit.
Yeah, and you know, the fact that the Steelers finished last in the NFL in rush defense last year, you know, is certainly something kind of hanging over that competition. And that's a critical element. You cannot finish last in the NFL in run defense and expect to be a team that, you know, I think you have to be fortunate to make the playoffs when you're last in the NFL in run defense. And then winning any playoff games with that kind of the defense is, you know, it's ridiculously difficult. Unlikely, I think, is maybe the best word to describe it. So, you know, that has to get fixed. That has to get straightened out. And I don't know, Devin Bush, that's another position a little bit in my mind where it's difficult for me, you know, without the ability to, you know, watch it on video back and forth, you know, back and forth to slow it down, you know, all that kind of stuff. Watching it live is difficult to know. Now, did he get blown off the ball? Was there some mistake made in the defensive front where
right.
maybe whoever blocked him wasn't supposed to get to that level, you know, those kinds of things. So, but it just, he just doesn't seem to me, to my untrained eye, to be the same guy he was as a rookie. And, you know, Brooke Pryor of ESPN, let me just give credit where it's due. This was her story. She was talking to Devin Bush, and he said, you know, he likened his situation to, and again, I'm paraphrasing this, so don't hold her to what, you know, I'm about to explain.
Right.
You know, he likened it to a situation where, you know, you go over and you pet a dog. You know, maybe the dog's been friendly to you all this time. So you go over to pet the dog and the dog bites you. Okay, and it hurts and you bleed. And now, so okay, then the wound heals again. So you're looking at that dog again and think, wow, I was petting him all that time and everything's okay. Then the last time I went over, he bit me. So when I go over to the dog again, is he going to bite me again? Or is this going to be, we going back to the way it used to be? And so there's a doubt there in your mind with the dog. An athlete to the level that you have to be, first of all, to get into the NFL, to be a starter in the NFL, but also to be at the 10th overall pick
right.
in a draft, you know, you probably spent most of your athletic career being able to count on your body. All of a sudden, now, after he blew out his knee, Devin Bush didn't think he could count on his body anymore because his body let him down. Non-contact, blew out the ACL. So, you know, I think that there's two things that have to be fixed. The physical, the knee itself, and then you got to get over the mental thing of what happened. You know, and the doubt that you may have, is it going to happen again? And so those are a couple of things that athletes in that situation have to contend with. And I don't imagine it's very easy. I've never been in that situation. I don't have any athletic ability to lose in the first place. But, you know, when people say, well, you know, get over it, you know, go pet the dog. Well, it's not that easy. So I don't know if that's part of his problem still. He's not trusting it, or maybe, it, you know, you just lose a little bit because even, you know, the surgery could be quote unquote successful, but there's damage there.
Yeah.
And maybe when it heals, it's not the same. I don't know, you know. So there's a lot of factors involved that I don't think you can put your finger on and definitively say, this is it. This is the issue. But I just don't think that, you know, if Devin Bush was playing like he did as a rookie, all due respect to Robert Spillane, I don't think there would be a competition like there is going on currently.
No, and I think that the Steelers really wish that there wouldn't be, but, you know, you got to do what you got to do, and they need improved play from that inside linebacker spot, and we know that Tomlin doesn't care which guy it is. He just needs someone to step up.
Absolutely, because, you know, the inside linebacker spot may not be the only reason that the Steelers were last in the NFL last year in run defense, but it's certainly a contributing yeah. factor, and you cannot have – you know, poor, inconsistent play at that position and hope to be good against the run. So, you know, that's got to get figured out. I don't know what the answer is right now. I got to be honest with you.
Well, hopefully some answers avail themselves at practice today. That gets underway at 1:55 on the campus of St. Vincent College up in Latrobe on Chuck Knoll Field. So if you're heading up, you only got a handful of days left that you can witness Steelers practice at Latrobe. So make sure you do it before camp breaks Thursday to the public, Friday for the players. That's going to do it for today's training camp report. Always appreciate you guys giving us a listen. Labs and I will be back again at 9 a.m. sharp tomorrow, recapping today's practice. Let's hand the baton off, though, to Wolf and Starks as you'll be going in the locker room for the next couple hours on SNR.
Tired of pickup truck bed chaos? Meet Decked, game-changing USA-made full bed-length drawers for tools and gear. Waterproof, dustproof, lockable, secure. Whether you're working, hunting, fishing, camping, or just getting out of town. And introducing Decked Deco Cases. Tough, modular, problem-solving cases built for the truck, job site, campsite, or garage. Say goodbye to random bins and tie-downs. Order now at Decked.com/iHeart for free shipping. Decked, your truck, your rules. Decked.com/iHeart.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.